I'm Afshin Rathansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from Dubai in the UAE. Tomorrow may mark the anniversary of the creation of Nazi-aligned Vichy France, but it also is when leaders of the Washington Axis fighting Russia through Ukraine gather in Lithuania to discuss battle plans not only against Moscow, but Beijing as well. So how far will Washington go as Europe's economies decline in tatters and rioting and the shadows of nuclear war darken and lengthen? The retired Lieutenant General of Russia's Armed Forces, Chairman of the Executive Council at the Russian Center for Policy Studies, Yevgeny Buzhinsky, joins me now from Moscow. Thank you so much, Lieutenant General, for coming on. So, billions of dollars being poured into Zelensky's coffers. What do you expect from this summit in Vilnius tomorrow?
Well, actually, I do not expect much, frankly, because... Well, I understand the expectations of Zelensky personally and Ukrainian leadership that something will happen in Vilnius as regards the invitation of Ukraine to the alliance, but I don't think that's feasible. First of all, because except some. Fiercely anti-Russian states like Baltic states, Poland, which would like to see Ukraine in NATO tomorrow, irrespective of the consequences. There are many European countries which oppose this, at least until the crisis is over. Moreover, even the Biden administration now is against has the invitation of Ukraine. And moreover, I would say that I'm sure that there are informal contacts between Russian government and U.S. government, I think that the Russian side will have already delivered, if not will deliver, a very clear signal that if Ukraine is invited, the war will not be over, because that was one of the main goals of the Russian special operation, to prevent Ukrainian membership in the alliance.
Of course, they could try, therefore, and say, look, Russia made a mistake. That's why NATO is going to allow them in. The boss of the CIA, Bill Burns, former ambassador to Moscow, he made this secret trip, apparently, to see Zelensky. You think Bill Burns might have been explaining to Zelensky why, obviously, Ukraine can't join NATO, because that would mean Article 5 would require Britain and who knows who else to attack Russia?
Well, as for the visit of Bill Burns to Kyiv recently, I think that yes, I agree that one of the points on the agenda was the Ukrainian aspirations as for joining the alliance. I'm sure that Burns explained the current U.S. position and prospects of Ukraine in NATO. Moreover, I suspect that even in the United States, irrespective of all these claims that we will support Ukraine as long as it needed, they understand that the picture on the battlefield is not in favor of Ukraine. All these very, very widely advertised actions as counteroffensive or offensive. I don't understand why counteroffensive. They call it counteroffensive because Russia did not attack you. Well, was not in offensive to for the Ukrainians to launch counter.
You think it's Russia that has the counteroffensive, in effect, since the 2014 coup?
That's right. And moreover, I think that counteroffensive will be launched by Russian Federation. I don't know when, in a week, in a month, maybe in a couple of months. But for sure, this stage of conflict will finish with Russian counteroffensive. And I am sure it will be successful. So I think that the Americans understand that sooner or later they've got to sit down at the table and find some solution, some diplomatic or peaceful solution to the conflict. And of course, I hope that Burns explained to Zelensky that his plan is kind of fantasy, it's kind of wishful thinking. These boundaries of 1991, Crimea back, everything back, reparations, contributions. So he wants to play a winner. It will never happen.
Do you know Bill Burns?
Yes, I know Bill Burns. I got acquainted with him when he was ambassador, U.S. ambassador in Moscow. Then during my, various visits to Washington, I had meetings with Bill Burns when he was deputy head of the State Department.
Yeah, do you think he's a sensible sort of person? Because what do you think of the fact that in Britain there are politicians talking about the need to go to all-out war with Russia rather than presumably using Ukraine as a proxy, and the fact that other states in Europe are talking about the need to start, I don't know, blowing up parts of Russia?
Well, you see, I don't understand the purpose. Well, the in a whole, of course, the anti-Russian, Russophobic position of Great Britain is not the is not a secret. It's been like this for decades, for even for centuries. So we have no illusions about the position of.
Do you think Bill Burns understands that?
Well, Bill Burns is a different story. We are talking now about Bill Burns or UK.
I just wondered whether you thought, since you knew Bill Burns, current head of the CIA, whether he would recognize that some of the voices in Europe are not practical.
Yes, of course. I am sure about that. I'm sure about that, that he recognizes that position of some countries is extremist. Moreover, there is now a lot of talk about, especially in UK, that don't be afraid of Russia, don't be afraid of nuclear weapons. It's not so dangerous. It's not so frightening. We can just fight a limited nuclear war in Ukraine or in Russia. It's so restless. It's so I can't understand why reasonable people, and I believe that people in UK, I mean, in the UK government, in the governments of other European countries, even in the Baltics, they are reasonable enough not to talk about nuclear weapons, because it's absolutely irresponsible, especially for Britain.
I'll get on to nuclear weapons in a second, but of course, media is restricted in Britain very strictly. You can't talk about Nazis in Ukraine. You can't talk about Zelensky stopping elections next year, so it's not a democracy. But in their media landscape, can you understand their confusion? Because all they talk about is the Prigozhin march to Moscow. I mean, what exactly happened? Because Prigozhin seems to be strengthened, Shoigu is strengthened, Putin is strengthened, and the media don't know in NATO countries how to describe what actually happened. Even they are not really saying anymore, oh, Putin is about to fall. What's your understanding of what happened on June 24th?
Well, you see, it's all about money. It's all about money, I repeat, because Prigozhin he's a businessman, yes, with some criminal past, but he's a businessman. He is the owner of the huge catering company. Moreover, he used to be, I don't know the state of the status now, but he was the owner of a private military company, Wagner. And he earned from the state, from the Minister of Defense, President Putin voiced out recently the figures annually, as only on the catering contract with the Minister of Defense, he last year he earned $1 billion US dollars in US currency. Plus, he earned, not he, but the state paid to his people in the company more than $1 billion US dollars as their salaries, insurance, all kinds of compensations. So he was earning quite a lot of money. But when his, I would say, quarrel or misunderstandings with Minister Shoigu and Chief of General Staff Gerasimov started, it all finished that for this year, the Minister of Defense refused to prolong catering contract first. Second, the Minister of Defense decided that all volunteers, all private companies, and Wagner is not the only private military company which is acting in the in Ukraine. All these companies should sign a contract with the Minister of Defense and actually put themselves under direct command of not of the owner of the company, but to the direct command of the Minister of Defense. Prigozhin was the only leader of the owner of the private company who refused. After that, Shoigu said, in this case, you are out of the battlefield. You may act wherever you want, in Africa, in Asia, where you started your activity, but not in Ukraine. In Ukraine, only combat units subordinate to the general staff, to the Minister of Defense, will continue special operation. After that, of course, Prigozhin went furious and actually did this reckless and absolutely senseless action.
Well, we're talking about the Wagner Group, but is the fact that Russia's Ministry of Defense allows privatization in the forces a problem, some sort of legacy of the neoliberal 90s? Do you think there has to be a rethink in the Russian Ministry of Defense of using private contractors? I know you've said that in NATO they suffer because of using private contractors just in manufacture of ammunition to replace that destroyed by the Russian army.
Well, you see, I have nothing against private companies. I remember the it was in 2010 or 2009 when the conversations in the Ministry of Defense started about the private companies which used to be in the West, especially U.S. Companies in Iraq, like Blackwater and others. But it was agreed that private companies are needed to act abroad where official Russian military involvement is not advisable for the political reasons. So then Wagner was organized at first. It was in 2010 or 11, I don't remember exactly. And the, their area of responsibility, if I may put it like this, was mainly Africa. Advisors, trainers, instructors. So with very little support, I mean, from the viewpoint of material from the Minister of Defense, but the political coverage was provided.
Lieutenant General Brzezinski, I'll stop you there. More from the chairman of the Executive Council at the Russian Center for Policy Studies after this break.
I live in a city where the temperature is 3 degrees higher already from the neighboring townhoods. You know why? Because the other townships haven't chopped off the trees. But in Dhaka, in the name of development and in our pursuit to become a capital like Singapore, we are all going for urbanization and just covering all the greens with concrete. So when you destruct nature, it takes a revenge on it.
Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Yevgeny Pushinsky, retired Lieutenant General of the Russian Armed Forces and Chairman of the Executive Council at the Russian Center for Policy Studies. So we were talking about Wagner and privatization. Of course, some in Russia are talking about class elements in the current conflict. I mean, why is it anecdotally people talk about the rich Russians being able to escape the draft and the poor ones having to go to the front? Was that always there since the Russian Federation was created after the fall of the Soviet Union? Or is this a new thing?
Well, first of all, I do not agree that rich do not take part and only... Well, of course, there is some social inequality in Russia, like in all free market countries. Maybe in Russia the gap is too wide, that's true. But people who are now fighting in Ukraine, especially volunteers, especially people who voluntarily sign contracts with Minister of Defense, now the figures, each day 1,400 people sign contract with the Minister of Defense and going to Ukraine. Since the 1st of January till yesterday, 185,000 people already signed contracts with the Minister of Defense. So that's the very good figure for forming reserve for the future counteroffensive, by the way. So I know a lot of people from the well, not rich, but from the families with very handsome income, who voluntarily went to Ukraine and fighting for the goals of the...
I guess we'll have to wait for the statistics on that. One question that has often been asked, and of course NATO countries have lost wars in recent years in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, but they usually start off by aerially bombarding cities. Why has Russia not used its air force to bomb Ukraine?
That's a very good question, which I was asked by my American acquaintances, European acquaintances, especially American. Why didn't you bomb Ukraine since you had all the air superiority? You had all the means. And by the way, the first 2 weeks when a Russian army managed to destroy practically all military infrastructure, I mean air bases, naval bases, although without fleet, but still the anti-aircraft system. But that was, you see, I may agree or not, but that's the position of the president.
Because civilians are still being killed in Donetsk. Every other day,
right.
Every because other of day, this decision, but,
and frankly, I don't understand why we do not attack some elements, infrastructure elements, especially bridges, especially railway road depots, since they are considered to be civilian objects of infrastructure, and that's position of the president. We do not attack the civilian infrastructure in Ukraine. A lot of people do not understand this, but that's the position of the Russian president and the Russian government.
Maybe it's because when NATO does it, and has done it in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya and Syria. They ended up losing the wars. Who knows? So is the plan to just wait for all this Western weaponry to queue up and slowly destroy every tank, every HIMAR, every whatever multi-million-dollar piece of equipment being given away to Zelensky comes up and just destroy it all one by one?
Well, the effect which was expected, especially by Zelensky, by Ukraine, that Western equipment will be the magic stick for total victory in Ukraine, turned out to be, mildly speaking, not true. Well, actually, since the 4th of June, according to the official information of the Ministry of Defense, Ukraine lost more than 20,000 people or personnel and about 1,000 pieces of armor, including tanks, ACVs, and all other armored vehicles. I do not expect that, yes, Americans decided to supply some 30 pieces of Bradley. But you see these figures, 20, 30, Portugal promised to supply four Leopard tanks. 4, 6, 20, it doesn't matter. It's not the number which is essential for the fighting in Ukraine. I'm sure that, first of all, sooner or later, I presume maybe sooner, Ukrainians will be short of trained personnel and the equipment which Western countries are supplying. Equipment and ammunition are not enough for something decisive on the part of Ukraine.
Well, Western European populations seem to support their governments, their policy to fight on. Do you think this is because Russia's losing the propaganda war, the perception war? Obviously, in NATO wars before, they had journalists who would arguably lie for them, whether it be Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan or Libya. It doesn't look good, does it, to see drones attacking the Kremlin, the Kerch Bridge being destroyed, the Nord Stream to be destroyed, assassinations of journalists in Moscow and St. Petersburg. How is Russia going to convince Western Europe that they're being lied to?
Well, you see, of course, you know it better than me as a journalist, as a media man, that all the Western media, all major newspapers, TV stations, TV programs, radio programs, internet, they are all against Russia. They are every minute, every hour, they are broadcasting not true pictures what's going on in Ukraine.
Well, in fairness, it's illegal not to be against Russia, arguably, in, say, Britain. I mean, we now know that there are 50 British troops, soldiers in Ukraine from Jack Teixeira's Pentagon leaks. Can Russia respond to what to Britain's deployment of British soldiers, presumably there to train people to kill Russians?
They're not British soldiers officially. They're just mercenaries. And they're not considered...
Well, no, they're apparently British SAS or Special Forces, according to the leaks from the Pentagon that Jack Teixeira revealed and is going to jail for revealing.
Well, you see, that's not the reason. That's my opinion. It's not a sufficient reason to start war with UK. But we get rid of those people in Ukraine, and it's not very right not to publicly disclose the facts that how many British people were already killed or taken prison. I think there are a lot of political underpinning in all these actions. But we know that there are casualties among the British citizens, among US citizens, other Europeans. But the figures are not made public by the Russian Minister of Defense.
Well, there's been a lot of talk of nuclear weapons. People can watch our Karaganov interview on Rumble. But, and of course, Medvedev is talking about it being quite probable there'll be nuclear war. Elon Musk, perhaps the richest man in the world, he's helped journalists because he's freed up Twitter to be uncensored. But if all the US and Western European weaponry is all going to just be destroyed in the next few months, you said that Elon Musk's Starlink system has been arguably useful for Zelensky's neo-Nazi linked troops in Ukraine.
Yes, I understand that Starlink is being used for military purposes. That's an open secret. But the problem with Starlink that destroy every single transmitting station, it's quite a task. And to you see, to use maybe drones may be used, but it's not a radical solution. The radical solution will be the destruction of the space component of the Starlink, but that would entail that will be the very high stage of escalation in the confrontation with the United States. For the time being, I think that a Russian president is not ready for direct confrontation with the United States. He wants to avoid it.
Lieutenant General Brzezinski, thank you. And that's it for the show. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new episode. But until then, you can keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.